Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Gregory Stockel and Katie Weaver report on falling birth rates in South Korea. John Russell teaches us how to talk about music in this week's Everyday Grammar lesson. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here are Katie and Gregory.
Many adults in South Korea have chosen either not to have children or not to marry. Similar things are happening in other developed countries, but many consider South Korea's population crisis severe. A South Korean government agency announced in September that the total fertility rate reached 0.81 last year. The total fertility rate is the average number of babies born to each woman in their reproductive years. South Korea's fertility rate has been the world's lowest for 3 years now. The population decreased for the first time in 2021. It raised concerns for severe damage to the economy. Some observers expect labor shortages and high spending on retirement payments as the number of older people increases while the number of taxpayers decreases. President Yoon Suk-yeol has ordered policymakers to find better ways to deal with the problem. The fertility rate, he said, is still decreasing, although South Korea spent $210 billion over the past 16 years to increase it.
Many young South Koreans say that unlike their parents and grandparents, they do not feel an obligation to have a family. Reasons some say for not having children include a difficult job market, costly housing, inequality between the sexes, and social inequality. Some also say the high cost of raising children in a competitive society is a reason. Some women say men expect them to do much of the child care while they face discrimination at work. Lee So-young is a population policy expert at the Korea Institute for Health and Social Affairs. She said, "People think our country isn't an easy place to live." And she added, "They believe their children can't have better lives than them, and so question why they should bother to have babies." Choi Yoon-kyung is an expert at the Korea Institute of Child Care and Education. She said many people who fail to enter good schools and get good jobs feel they have become dropouts who cannot be happy. They feel that way even if they marry and have children because South Korea lacks social spending programs. She said South Korea failed to establish such programs during its economic growth in the 1960s to the 1980s.
There are no official numbers on how many South Koreans have chosen not to marry or have children. But records from one national agency show there were about 193,000 marriages in South Korea last year. That is a big drop from the highest point of 430,000 in 1996. Agency information also says about 260,600 babies were born in South Korea last year, down from 691,200 in 1996. The highest level was 1 million babies in 1971. The recent numbers were the lowest since the agency began collecting such information in 1970. Until the mid-1990s, South Korea had birth control programs, which the government started to slow the country's population increase after the Korean War. The government gave out birth control drugs and devices for free at public medical centers. It also offered men exemptions from some required military service if they had a medical operation that prevents fertility. United Nations information shows that the average South Korean woman gave birth to about 4 to 6 children in the 1950s and 60s, 3 to 4 in the 1970s, and fewer than 2 by the mid-1980s. South Korea has been offering different incentives and support programs for those who give birth to many children. But Choi said the fertility rate has been falling too fast to see any real effects. During a government meeting last month, officials said they would soon have to propose new measures to deal with the population decrease.
Yoo Young-yi is a financial worker in Seoul. She said that until she went to college, she strongly wanted a baby. But she changed her mind when she saw female co-workers concerned about their children or leaving early when their children were sick. She said her male co-workers did not have to do this. She said she then thought her ability to work would decrease if she had babies. Her 34-year-old husband, Jo Chun-hee, said he does not think having children is necessary. He works at an information technology company. Jo said he wants to enjoy his life after getting a job made him feel like I was standing on the edge of a cliff. I'm Gregory Stockel.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Imagine that you hear music on the radio or on your phone. Maybe you like the sounds. Maybe you do not. But how should you describe the music? What kinds of terms and structures should you use in a discussion? In today's Everyday Grammar, we will explore how you can talk about music. You will learn about sentence patterns, adjectives, and adjectival prepositional phrases. Let's start with some important terms and ideas. Sentences often fall into patterns, usual, repeated structures. One of the structures commonly used to describe music is as follows. Subject, linking verb, adjective, or subject complement. Consider this example.
The music sounds nice.
The subject is the music. The linking verb is sounds, and the adjective is nice. The adjective is sometimes called the subject complement, meaning it completes the verb and modifies or describes the subject. Common linking verbs used to describe music include be and sound. For example, a person might say,
"This music is wild."
Or,
"This music is boring."
In both cases, adjectives such as wild or boring play an important part in the sentence. They describe how the speaker feels about the music. Some adjectives have a negative meaning. Boring means uninteresting, tiresome. If a person says that the music is boring, they are suggesting that they do not like the music. Other common adjectives used to describe music include loud, soft, smooth, harsh, fast, and slow. We can also describe the effects that music has on us. In this case, we can use adjectives such as relaxing, calming, exciting, moving, or touching. For example,
"This music is relaxing."
Or,
"This song is very touching."
Sometimes English speakers replace an adjective with a kind of phrase known as an adjectival prepositional phrase. These phrases, sometimes idiomatic expressions, name or describe something about the subject. For example, you might say,
"The violin sounds out of tune."
Or,
"The singer is out of his mind."
The former example, the one about the violin, uses the phrase out of tune, meaning not having the correct pitch or intonation. The latter example, the one about the singer, uses the phrase out of his mind, meaning that the singer has lost control of his mind or went insane. Let's take some time to work with these ideas. Choose a linking verb to connect the noun song and the adjective smooth. Pause the audio to consider your answer. Here is one possible answer.
"This song is smooth."
Now, describe a singer's voice by using the expression out of this world, meaning extremely impressive or enjoyable. Pause the audio to consider your answer. Here are two possible answers.
"Her voice is out of this world."
Or,
"His voice is out of this world."
The next time you listen to music, ask yourself the following questions. How would you use what you have learned today to describe the music you are listening to? Are there other words or structures that you should use to describe the music? Asking yourself these kinds of questions can improve more than just your English skills. These questions could also deepen your enjoyment of the music itself. I'm John Russell.
You just heard this week's Everyday Grammar lesson from John Russell. John joins me now to talk more about the topic. Welcome, John.
Hi, Ashley. Glad to be back. I was thinking it would be fun to listen to some music and describe it using ideas from the report.
That sounds fun. Let's try it. Let me pull up a song. Okay, here we go.
Interesting choice, Ashley. The adjective I would choose to describe the song is harsh, meaning overly intense or powerful. I might also say that it is wild, which suggests strong passion, desire, or excitement.
Those are good words. I would probably not use adjectives like touching or quiet to describe that song. Let's listen to something a little different now. Thank you.
Relaxing is one adjective that comes to mind. Moving is another. What about you, Ashley?
I would say that it's beautiful, but also boring.
Well, I guess we will have to disagree on that point.
I guess so. Thanks for visiting today, John.
You're welcome. See you next time.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. As we reported in our last program, slavery supporters failed to push through Congress a bill to make Kansas a slave state. Congress instead let the people of Kansas vote on the statehood constitution, written by pro-slavery men. The people rejected the Constitution, and slavery supporters gave up the fight for Kansas. Here are Steve Ember and Bob Doty to continue the story.
The problem of slavery continued to divide the North and South. Northerners warned that slavery could spread no farther. Southerners threatened to leave the Union unless Southern rights were protected. In the far West, one could forget this bitter dispute. There were no slaves in the West. The land and the weather were not right for the kind of farming that used slaves.
The West was growing quickly. Gold had brought thousands of settlers to California 10 years earlier. New discoveries of gold and silver now were leading men to Colorado, Arizona, and Nevada. "Don't go," warned the New York Tribune, "if you have a job or a farm. But if you have neither," it said, "and can get $50, then go to Colorado." There were many men without jobs or farms in the summer of 1858. The country had suffered a serious economic depression the year before, and jobs were difficult to find. Thousands left cities in the East. The first ones to reach Colorado reported that gold was easy to find. They said any man who worked hard could find $5 to $10 worth of gold a day, and sometimes even more.
The thousands who rushed to Colorado soon found that there was not as much gold as expected. The valuable metal became harder to find. No longer could it be washed from the bottoms of mountain streams. Men had to dig into the mountains of rock to get it. Huge digging machines and crushers were needed to get the gold from the rock. These machines were expensive. Few men had enough money to buy them. Some of the miners organized companies. They borrowed money from Eastern banks or sold shares of their companies. In a few years, almost all of the gold from Colorado came from the mining companies.
Many of those who went west to search for gold stayed to become farmers or storekeepers. Others moved farther west to find gold in Nevada or California. Some cleared the ground of trees and cut them into wood for houses. Such timber from the forests of Oregon and Washington was sold in California and Mexico, even in China and Hawaii. A few men recognized the need for transportation across the nation. Engineers planned four railroads, but northern and southern leaders could not agree on which one to build first. Until a railroad could be built, supplies were carried west in wagons, pulled by horses or oxen. Three men, Russell, Majors, and Waddell, formed a transportation company in 1855 to carry government supplies to soldiers in the West. They started with 500 wagons. 3 years later, the company had 3,500 wagons and 40,000 oxen.
Getting letters to and from the West was not easy in the 1850s. Ships brought mail to San Francisco two times a month. And once each month, mail would arrive in California after a slow trip by wagon from St. Louis, Missouri. The federal government decided to send mail overland two times a week to California. It gave the job of carrying the letters to a new company, the Overland Mail Company. The mail was carried by train or boat to St. Louis. Then it was put on Overland Company stage coaches, light wagons pulled by four or six horses. The company was told to take the mail along a 4,000-kilometer southern route through Arkansas, Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The mail arrived in Los Angeles 24 days after it left St. Louis.
There was a shorter way across the country, but the postal chief was a Southerner, A.V. Brown. He believed stagecoach travel might lead the way for a railroad, and he wanted a southern railroad to California. Brown said the southern route was the only one that could be kept open in all seasons. He said the other routes would be closed by snow in winter. The overland stagecoaches were large enough to carry four passengers, but not many people went to California in the coaches. The coaches never stopped for very long, only to change horses or drivers, and there were not many places to eat. Also, the trip was dangerous because of hostile Indians.
The shortest distance between Missouri and California was across the central part of the country. The Russell, Majors, and Waddell Company decided to show that this central route could be used all year. It began a speedy mail service called the Pony Express. Letters were carried by riders on fast horses. Stations with fresh horses were built about 24 kilometers apart all along the way. A rider would change horses at each station until he had traveled 120 kilometers. Then he would give his letters to another rider. In this way, the letters would be carried between California and Missouri. The first letters sent by Pony Express from California took 10 days to reach Missouri. The Pony Express lasted only 18 months. It was no longer needed after a telegraph line was completed to San Francisco.
Thank you.
As communications and transportation improved, the government was able to increase its control over the West. But closer ties were not welcomed between the government and a religious group known as the Mormons. The Mormon religion was started by a young New England man named Joseph Smith. In 1823, at the age of 18, Smith claimed that an angel told him of a golden book. He said the book contained God's words to the ancient people of America. Smith said he was able to read the strange writing in this book and put it into English. He called this work the Book of Mormon.
He organized a church and made himself its leader. Many people became Mormons. They believed themselves to be a special people chosen by God. Mormons worked hard. They helped each other and shared with those in need. People who did not agree with the beliefs of the Mormons did not like them. Trouble developed between Mormons and other people. Joseph Smith was forced to move his people from New York to Ohio and then to Missouri. The Mormons seemed finally to have found a home in Illinois. They built their own town and called it Nauvoo. They governed themselves and had their own defense force. The Mormons did so well that Nauvoo became the fastest-growing city in Illinois. Then some members of the group split apart because of a new message Smith claimed to have received from God. Smith said God gave permission for Mormons to have more than one wife. This was polygamy, and it was opposed by almost all people. Some of the Mormons who left the church published a newspaper criticizing Smith and the other Mormon leaders. Followers ordered by Smith destroyed the newspaper's publishing equipment. This caused non-Mormons to demonstrate and demand that Smith be punished. Smith was arrested and put in jail in Carthage, Illinois. His brother also was arrested. An angry mob attacked the jail and shot both Smith and his brother to death. The governor of Illinois ordered the Mormons to leave his state. He said only this would prevent further violence. There was no choice. They had to leave. The Mormons had a new leader, Brigham Young. Young decided to take his people west and find a new home for them. He wanted a place where they would be safe, where no one could interfere with their religion. Brigham Young told his people that he had seen their new home in a dream. He said they would search for it in the west, for a wide, beautiful valley. He said he would recognize it when he saw it.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.